Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A historic week-long heat wave continues to broil much of the state as temperatures will once again soar well above 100 degrees. The dangerous heat has heightened the fire danger across the state and pushed the state's electrical grid to the limit. But there have been other impacts to this heat wave that can't be measured with thermometer. CAP Radio environment reporter Manola Sakaida looked at how and why the heat is disproportionately impacting underserved communities and some solutions to help them endure future heat waves. Good morning, Manola.
Good morning.
So this is a heat wave that is one for the record books. We are all experiencing. It's not that much of a surprise. But this week, there were record temperatures from across Northern California, including Redding, Sacramento, Stockton, Modesto. Put this record heat into some more context.
Right. So, you know, like you mentioned, there have been records breaking all over the state this past week. And I've been kind of watching some of that here in Sacramento. And with today's forecast predicting another day over 100 degrees, we'll be at 43 days in this calendar year that have been over 100 degrees. And that in itself is a record because the last record before this one was 41 days in calendar year in 1988. So we broke that record a couple days ago. Another significant record was Sacramento's all-time high. Before this week, the highest temperature recorded in downtown Sacramento was 114 degrees in July 1925. And then on Tuesday, we broke that record with a temperature of 116 degrees. So it's just, again, been a really record-breaking past week. With the small piece of good news that we'll be under 100 degrees, hopefully this weekend. That's the forecast right now. But, you know, still some hot days ahead.
Yeah, 90-something degrees is going to feel a whole lot different after this week, especially since on Tuesday we broke a nearly century-old record. So you've been examining this heat wave through an environmental equity lens by learning how the heat is impacting different communities. Explain this angle for your reporting.
Right. So, you know, kind of like what you mentioned, temperature only tells us so much. There's so many other factors aside from temperature that really dictate how people experience that heat differently. And, you know, with this heat wave, I've seen so many efforts across the state to address the issues that this heat wave has really brought to the surface. And, you know, it's really important that we understand those issues so that we can prepare for the next time, which is, you know, inevitable. So, you know, an overarching lesson is that it's complex. There's a lot of factors here, but in general, for vulnerable populations, this heat wave is hitting worse because of all the compounding factors. You know, having this heat wave come on top of issues that these people or communities might already be dealing with prior to the heat wave. So one of the people I talked to was Giovanna Morales. She's the housing policy coordinator with Leadership Council, which is an advocacy organization in Fresno. And she talked to me about, you know, these compounding factors for low-income communities.
If there is a high rate of poverty in a community, most likely they're not going to have any type of cooling mechanism. And if they do, again, they're not going to turn it on. So it definitely impacts vulnerable populations differently and more acutely.
So I think what's interesting there is that sometimes it's not even about the availability of AC or infrastructure. It's just the fact that you can't even use it. And that's for a reason outside of just that infrastructure existing. So I thought that was, you know, a really good example there. And she gave me an example of what that looks like for the people that Leadership Council specifically services in the Central Valley.
We work with a lot of residents who are farm workers and who come home and they don't have any type of cooling mechanism and they have children. I mean, there's families that we work with whose children have asthma and the heat exacerbates their asthma and they get nosebleeds and headaches.
So it's not just heat strokes. You know, there's so many other health concerns to be had there. Yeah, that was just a big lesson that heat waves have a lot of consequences beyond the most obvious health impacts.
Yeah. I mean, our AC broke on Sunday and we were fortunate to get it fixed, but not everyone can afford that. That's expensive. Mm-hmm. And so that's one example of having the infrastructure, but not actually using that air conditioning because you can't. So it seems like these community organizations are seeing how these issues accumulate and how they're really connected to pre-existing issues.
Exactly. And you know, that's a great example too from your own life. It's just one little change can really totally shift your situation. And I, you know, talk to community organizers, but I also talk to some researchers with UCLA who've been focusing on researching extreme heat and how that affects urban areas for a while now. And one of those researchers was Kelly Turner. She's the co-director of UCLA's Luskin Center for Innovation. And one of the topics she studies is the intersection of extreme heat and urban planning. So she told me that a growing part of her research is examining how heat can degrade a person's, you know, overall quality of life, not just kind of looking at numerical factors and how that's connected to where they live and their community. So one part of that research was a listening session she organized in the East Coachella Valley, which she told me a little bit about. And she told me that she asked locals this question, basically, tell me about a day when you were experiencing, you know, extreme heat, or a time when you experienced extreme heat, and what happened. And this is one of the stories that she heard and told me.
So this person says, okay, well, my husband works in agriculture and he's working in the fields all day long and he was really, really hot and he didn't feel well. And he came home and we didn't have air conditioning or any way to cool down. And he suffered a heat stroke and he had to call into work, or he couldn't go to work. He lost his job. Well, we didn't have enough money to pay our rent. So we ended up being evicted from our home. And that just goes to show how something like having access to air conditioning that most of us take for granted cascaded into a series of events that led to housing insecurity.
So you can see a lot of comparisons between Giovanna's story and hers. So you can tell that this isn't, you know, a unique story, unfortunately.
Yeah, one of the most direct examples are groups of people like farm workers. They work outside. They already experience grueling heat and have a more intense experience during a heat wave when compared to someone who works inside with air conditioning. Are there other comparisons that we can draw from locally?
Yeah, so, you know, even in Sacramento, even though we're all experiencing this heat wave, different areas in Sacramento experience it differently. So I also talked to Kelly Turner about that. And that's where the urban planning comes in.
Because certain groups are disproportionately exposed to heat because we have built cities in a way that deprives some communities of green space and shade, which makes those communities hotter just a few blocks away from other areas of the city that are wealthy and have the infrastructure to provide cooling and shade through the built features of the environment.
So, you know, that's an example of how shade from buildings or trees can just totally transform your experience in a neighborhood. And, you know, without shade, residents can really suffer from that.
Yeah. And this all trickles down to neighborhoods that are underserved. And those are typically neighborhoods of color due to historical practices of redlining and things like that. What did you learn about that in terms of extreme heat?
Exactly. So not coincidentally, a lot of the neighborhoods that often have the worst infrastructure are populated by communities of color. So I also talked to UCLA researcher Jake D'Alessandro about this. He's a postdoctoral fellow working with Turner at the Luskin Center. And he told me about some of those relationships.
The interesting thing that we're finding in California, and this is consistent throughout the Southwest, but it's amplified in California, is Latino communities or Latinx communities are always 4 or 5 degrees warmer than the rest of the metro average. We found that in Los Angeles. We found that in San Diego, Bakersfield, Fresno, Sacramento, San Jose.
And he told me that, you know, like you said, history of redlining is a big part of that, pushing residents of color to these areas that aren't given as much infrastructure and resources.
This pattern is almost present in every city I've ever looked at. And, you know, a lot of times you could even break it down to neighborhoods that have been historically redlined. There's always a relationship between race, income, and these environmental injustices.
So again, just you can see that relationship there.
Manola Sakaitha is CAP Radio's environment reporter. Thank you so much, Manola.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a few minutes.